The headlines: confrontation in the Sea of Oman. The Islamic Revolution Guards Corps stopping U.S. forces from stealing Iranian crude oil. A Republican winning the race for governor in the U.S. state of Virginia and a setback for President Biden ahead of next year's congressional elections. Plus, Ethiopian authorities are asking residents in Addis Ababa to take up arms and defend their city amid fears that rebels from Tigray are advancing on the capital. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour: Tehran says Washington has failed in an attempt to steal Iranian oil in the waters of the Sea of Oman. Iran's Revolutionary Guards Corps says that it's releasing footage of the incident. According to Tehran, the U.S. confiscated a tanker carrying Iranian oil exports in the Sea of Oman and then transferred the fuel shipments to another tanker. However, Iran's IRGC forces have succeeded to capture the tanker and lead it towards Iran's territorial waters. All U.S. attempts to block the tanker's pathway or catch it with helicopters have failed amid the IRGC's protection of the tanker. This is Washington's latest attempt in creating instability in Iran's southern waters. Well, to get a better perspective on that story, we're now joined by journalist and political commentator Mostafa Khoshchashm, who's with us from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Also, we have journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas, who's with us from the British capital, London. Let's start off with Mr. Khoshchashm in Tehran. First of all, give us your thoughts on this disruptive actions by the United States in Iran's southern waters.
Hello, Abby, and thanks for having me. Well, definitely this is banditry. This is a violation of international rules and regulations. Basically speaking, as Americans might claim that this is a move in line with their unilateral sanctions against Iran, well, when sanctions happen outside Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, they are illegal, definitely, both the sanctions and this kind of move, a unilateral move by the United States, is violating international rules and regulations. And Iran is entitled to defend itself, not just defending its tanker that it did, it has already done, but also in future, it could resort to deterrence and deterring actions in order to prevent any similar attack by the Americans. This is an American invasion, a hostile action against Iranian interests. This would definitely escalate the tensions. But the purpose of such moves is very much clear, as Iran has been practicing resistance diplomacy to resist against the United States pressures, illegal sanctions, and forces to get Tehran back to the nuclear talks, the Vienna talks, the way the U.S. desires, in order to push Tehran to consent to the U.S. demands. Well, they escalated the tensions, both the United States and its proxy Israeli regime. They escalated the tensions against Iran all throughout the region. They resorted to cyber attack on Iranian oil palms just a few weeks ago. They also escalated the tensions through sabotage attacks, terrorist attacks, and through sabotaging or efforts to sabotage Tehran's relations with some regional states. But after Tehran reiterated that it would get back to the Vienna talks soon, though resistance diplomacy is in place, it would not agree to the U.S., the concessions that the U.S. has demanded. They are pressuring Tehran on the threshold of the resumption of the talks in Vienna in order to force Tehran to agree to their, to the merits that they are demanding and to the terms and conditions in the Vienna talks. Tehran has stressed that it would get back to the nuclear talks, but it's very much entitled to get back to the talks the way it desires. It is to say, because there has been no agreement already held between Iran and the Europeans or the West, then Tehran is entitled to resume these talks from round 2, round 3, or round 7. it's Tehran's choice. So they are pressuring Tehran through cyber attacks, through terror, assassination, whatever they could, they are doing in order to escalate the tensions. But they know that war would be devastating both to the Israeli regime and Americans, so that would be a red line that they do not mean to cross. But they are going to. They are headed for that way because they are having miscalculation about Iran's reaction. Let's take a look at what happened under Donald Trump, who was said to be a madman, a crazy guy, who might have resorted to military action. This never stopped Iran from bombing, Ayn al-Assad, from shooting down the Global Hawk. Iran has shown that it's very much resolved to defend its interests. Therefore, Tehran would definitely defend its interests, no matter if it happens under Biden or anyone else. It has showed that in practice, and it will in future, especially as the U.S. is growing weaker than before, as we all saw in the escape from Afghanistan. Definitely this path would lead to nowhere. With a revolutionary government like President Raisi's administration in office, there is no doubt that Tehran would resist, and the Iranian new team of negotiators would never go under impact, or the Islamic Republic would never go under any kind of negative impact or to lose its resolve, to weaken its resolve in the talks. So this line of strategy that has already been exercised against Iran under Obama, this would lead to no result for the United States. It would just escalate the tensions and also risk the breakout of war. And other global actors should take action if they do not want to see escalating instability and tensions in the region, which would be harmful to anyone, especially the U.S. allies.
Let's bring in Said Mohsen Abbas in London. Mr. Abbas, I'd like to get your perspective on this issue, and if you'd like to add any comments to what our guest in Tehran said. This is, in his words, banditry, it's piracy. Unpack those comments and what has taken place for us and our viewers, please.
Well, it's a continuation of America's violation of international law. That was something which everybody was moaning about under Trump, but Biden is no different. The problem really is that the Americans and the Israelis desperately want to hem Iran in, to force it, to coerce it, to corner it, to subjugate it. The reality is that Iran is using a lot of these maritime routes to supply, for instance, oil to beleaguered nations like Lebanon, which are under all sorts of economic terrorism themselves, again, for their associations with the resistance axis and Islamic Republic of Iran. We've had now over 26 or around 26 deliveries of oil to Lebanon, which is an actual country the Americans and the Israelis desperately want to get under their grip fully due to their fear of Hezbollah on the borders and their desire to continue their hegemony in the region. Now, in the Gulf of Aden, this is not the first incident. There's been at least one more incident of piracy, and Iran has made it clear that the Navy presence in the Gulf of Aden around the Horn of Africa really is geared primarily towards protecting its shipping against Somali pirates. Indeed, they've done that successfully. But on this occasion, it does seem as though the Americans themselves have been directly involved, and that's an escalation. It's an escalation, as my colleague said, that the calculations or the miscalculations that might be going on in Washington and Tel Aviv could cost a lot of people very dearly. The West is struggling under energy crisis already, a looming energy crisis. The last thing that the Europeans and other nations around the world, in fact, want is a maritime confrontation which leads to Iran perhaps even closing down the Hormuz. You know, there's something like 20 or 30% of the world's energy, oil supplies, gas supplies, etc., come through that particular region of the oceans, and it's Iran that is the boss in that particular region. But the International Maritime Bureau, etc., and other agencies have to really clamp down on this. You know, if piracy by individuals who are criminals is one thing, but a criminal state getting involved, we all know that the Americans behave in a criminal manner in terms of violation of other nations' sovereignty. We know the Iranians do it on a daily basis. But this is really getting out of hand. It's not just going to be an incident ultimately if it triggers off onto a wider scale, which will restrict itself to a fight between Iran and America. It will draw in Israel. It will draw in all of their proxies in that region, the UAE, others who are providing military bases and launch sites for aircraft, and the Fifth Fleet of the Americans in that region. All of them will be dragged into a war, which I think that nobody can ultimately really prosper from. And it's certainly not a war that Iran is going to lose either, because the Americans know well the spirit and the attitude and the situation of the IRGC and the Islamic forces of Iran. So I would say that there needs to be urgent discussions about these kinds of escalations if the world doesn't want to see really a monumental disaster, which is where Israel is pushing these situations in the west of Asia.
Mr. Abbas, I'm going to stay with you for just another question right here. We know that this is in continuation, whatever the U.S. is doing is in continuation of the maximum pressure campaign, so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran. It has been doing so specifically with sanctions targeting Iranian crude. When we look at the timing of this incident, would you say that the U.S. Is trying in a way to affect the restarting of the JCPOA negotiations in some shape or form?
I think so. I mean, carrot and stick is the game that gets played in these scenarios. I think that the Americans should have learned by now that the Islamic Republic of Iran isn't going to be tempted either by the carrot or fear the stick. This has been a consistent policy, even when the Iranian establishment has been, inverted commas, moderate. I mean, now you have either Raisi's, presiding over a government which is very firm in its desire to develop its relations with the regional neighbors, to solve the problems of the region internally amongst those neighbors, to ensure that the Americans and all external agencies that have no business in West Asia are expelled or told to leave at the very least. And I think this policy is not going to change. No matter what the Americans do, no matter what the Israelis want from the Americans, which is basically to draw them into doing a dirty war against Iran. You can see that if the Americans were so confident, they wouldn't be resorting to, asymmetric warfare or cold wars or, the soft war techniques. They would have jumped to the hot war by now long ago. The truth is those missile defense systems that Iran has in its possession, its general readiness, the military has shown over the last month that they are fully prepared in a very fully integrated defense mechanism, which includes the cyber warfare defense systems, it includes the aerospace systems that are in place, and it certainly includes the ground forces, of which there are well over 1.5 million waiting for any invasion or attack or attempt to do anything which would harm the interests of the Iranian people. I don't think it's in the interests of the world, forget about anybody else or the Iranians, it's not in the interests of the world that we see a war developing against Iran. Israelis are sorely tempted because they know their days are numbered. The resistance axis is increasingly gaining more and more support. The morale is high. They've lost in the 11-day war against the Palestinian resistance, the weakest of all the resistance axis. And I think that this is where Israel is pushing America towards folly, which would cost the world very, very dearly.
Allow me to thank my guest, journalist and political commentator Mostafa Khoshesh, speaking to us from the Iranian capital, Tehran. And thanks to journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas, speaking to us from London. Time for some other news now. It's election night in the U.S. with multiple polls underway in several key states, including the gubernatorial races in Virginia and New Jersey. In Virginia, Republican Glenn Youngkin is set to win the race against his Democratic rival, Terry McAuliffe. In New Jersey, Republican Jack Ciattarelli is holding a lead over incumbent Democratic rival Governor Phil Murphy. Meanwhile, mayoral races are also ongoing in several cities, including Atlanta, Boston, and Pittsburgh. The New York City has elected Democrat Eric Adams as its new mayor. The polls are, in fact, putting the presidency of Joe Biden to test ahead of next year's midterm elections. Our correspondent Colin Campbell in Washington has been monitoring the situation for us. He says President Biden's growing unpopularity driven by his failure in Afghanistan and the economic concerns is in fact helping Republicans maintain a lead in the gubernatorial elections.
Yeah, right now we may be experiencing what some are calling the Trump effect as we see that the former president may have had a influence on some of these elections, especially when we see the Republicans are coming out ahead in the state of Virginia and in New Jersey. Now, we did have a win from Eric Adams, who's a Democrat in New York, as far as New York mayor, the second African-American to hold that position. But we are looking at the governor races. And what's interesting is the disparity that we're seeing where a lot of people thought that Democrats may surge ahead. But recently, we do have a president who is not that popular. Well, President Joe Biden is facing high disapproval numbers and low approval numbers, and he hasn't had very many wins lately. Let's take a look at what's been happening. We've had, he had failures in Afghanistan when there was an attack where several service members were killed. We still have an economy that's still not up and running the way that people would like. We have issues when it comes to his infrastructure bill. It seems that pieces of the infrastructure bill keep getting taken out. And a lot of people are wondering what is going on with the promises coming from the Biden administration.
And time for one last news item. Ethiopia declares a nationwide state of emergency amid fears that rebels from the northern region of Tigray are heading for the capital. The government has also ordered residents of Addis Ababa to prepare to defend their neighborhoods. This follows days of reported advances by forces of the Tigray People's Liberation Front. Ethiopian lawmakers are expected to approve the state of emergency within 24 hours, while further possible restrictions include a curfew, road closures, and searching people suspected of links to terror groups. Thousands of people have lost their lives since the government launched an offensive against rebel forces in Tigray. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Where we relax, where important events take place. It is what every household in Iran has quite a few of. It is where life happens and what is passed down from generation to generation. It is in just about every country and is a symbol of cultural pride, reputation, and fine art. You guessed it. It is the exquisite Persian rug.
Hello again, I'm Samson Sees, and in this segment of Bazaar, we will explore the Iranian carpet industry and how it has adapted to the challenges posed by sanctions and fast-paced modern trends, and its related trades, including innovations in manufacturing, and how the general love of this magnificent rug has renovated Iran's rug production, both nationally and internationally. Iran managed to stay away from the race to the bottom in the international competition. Other international competitors such as Afghanistan, Pakistan, Turkey and even India have lowered quality standards in production in an effort to reduce prices, hoping to increase their international trade. However, Iran's carpet industry has maintained the integrity of its carpet industry while adjusting to modern demands and economic struggles.
We all know that our modern times involve a lot of technology. This is also true when it comes to the carpet industry. New technology and development of fine machinery have allowed the carpet industry in Iran to produce high-quality carpets. These machines are so advanced that these carpets can resemble the quality and features of a hand-woven carpet. Plus, it takes a fraction of the time required to weave a carpet by hand. In short, speed of quality in production has been the winning card that is controlled by new technology. In order to gain a deeper understanding of the current manufacturing, machinery, and techniques, we visited Almas Kavir Carpets, an expansive carpet manufacturing facility. With a well-established reputation, this company began operating in 2007 in Kerman province. Located approximately 25 kilometers outside of the city of Kerman, Almas Kavir Carpets, with its contemporary technology and world-class certifications, is a well-recognized name all over Iran. While hand-woven carpets are still highly prized and holds a large portion of Iranian exports in the world market, the machine-woven carpet is now emerging as a close contender. Machine-woven carpets are appealingly ideal in terms of their price and large variety in patterns. You don't have to be an art collector just to appreciate an Iranian carpet. The distinctive feature that most carpet enthusiasts have an eye for is the number of knots in the width of the carpet. Just like pixels on an LCD display, when there are more pixels, you get a sharper image with more details. In other words, in terms of carpets, the more knots there are in a square centimeter of a carpet, the denser the carpet, and the more it will resemble a hand-woven carpet in terms of intricacy of pattern. These carpets are produced with the most modern technology, which can create denser carpets. Using this equipment offers the possibility of elaborate designs and intricate details to please the customer's ever-changing tastes. This production characteristic is one that Almas Kavir has a large ability to produce without compromising the quality of the carpet. Carpets with such elaborate detail are highly prized, and of course you would understand why when you see the soothing patterns with spectacular colors and definition. It is exciting to see how this company has managed to stay true to the ancient roots of Iranian carpet weaving. It offers diverse range of patterns, both modern designs as well as traditional Kerman patterns, in large variety. On this note, in a broader scale, Iran has the technological capacity to annually produce over 120 million square meters of machine-woven carpets. Iran has over 1,300 carpet manufacturing facilities across the country. The machine-powered carpet industry has been operating for over half a century. One way it has maintained its integrity is by adhering to national and global standards and respecting the ancient art of carpet weaving. So it is no surprise to see how resilient this industry has remained. Uses of domestically produced threads such as acrylic, polyester, with weaving and loom machines imported from Belgium and Germany, procured from internationally recognized brands. The Iranian machine-made carpet is considered the most expensive textile production in the world in terms of design, quality, and color. It continues to use high-quality raw materials and processes of making both hand-woven and machine-woven carpets.
The key to most of these sales have been the exhibitions. Whether you are an art connoisseur or a lover of beautiful objects, the desire to own a Persian carpet has been a driving force in the national and international market.
Almaz Kabir has had its sights set on increasing international exports. However, because of the decline in the Iranian economy in recent years, more and more customers are turning towards machine-made carpets as the prices are more affordable. This is a bonus for Almaz Kabir Carpets as it supports national growth. Such results have led to a production boom in the carpet industry. Increase in manufacturing brought sustainability and self-sufficiency of a production that is not only focused on exports. Internal growth within the borders of Iran would mean supporting export increases. According to statistics from Iran Textile Association, machine-made carpet exports account for over 50% of Iran's total textile fabric exports, with a value of over $750 million. Holding a global share of 30%, carpets are the second largest export of Iran, the first being energy-producing materials and mining. The US ban on import of Iranian carpets in September 2010 truly did a number on the Iranian carpet industry. It is interesting to know that America was the biggest importer of Persian rugs for years leading up to the 2010 sanctions. The results were a large decline in carpet exports. However, in 2017 to 2019, Iran enjoyed a magnificent comeback and a large increase in carpet exports. Innovation in production has been one of the pillars of speed. For Almaz Kabir, it began with quality. So, as the carpet industry turns its gaze towards the domestic market, it has sought to woo customers with larger varieties, colors, designs, and modern patterns. Consequently, bringing more revenue, resulting in exponential growth of this industry. This expansion also helped bolster related markets and sectors, such as the thread spinning industry. One such discipline you might be surprised to know about that frequently utilizes the services of this company is the architecture community. With the fast pace of modernity, you might have noticed that individualized tastes have become paramount. Almaz Kabir has adapted to these demands with its R&D department running on all six cylinders. With a long-standing reputation of honoring the art of Kerman's carpets, it prides itself in its progressive steps towards discovering new products to offer. With this industrial boom comes job security and opportunity. Many employees have left the hand-weaving carpet industry owing to low wages and arduous labor. Hand-woven carpets can take up to 5 years to complete. Most of the expenses for the production of these carpets goes to the raw materials, such as finely hand-woven silks and wools. Not much is left for the weavers themselves. Remarkably, weavers' salaries in Iran are relatively high in comparison to other countries with hand-woven carpet exports, where the laborers are often exceptionally underpaid in order to reduce production costs and product end prices. So, treading this fine line carefully is crucial. As Almaz Kabir Carpets imports its own highly specialized machines for weaving, it has also provided for more job opportunities such as machine maintenance, transportations, and other technology support such as IT. With less arduous labor for weaving, it has reduced some of its expenses. Consequently, this manufacturer is able to offer steady salary and benefits to its employees without the hard labor while also creating more business opportunities. On a larger scale, the shift towards industrialization of local crafts, such as thread spinning for textile production, also offers prospects for growth and technological development for sustaining the production of goods necessary to meet market demands.
The Association of Iran Textiles Industries has announced that Iran is self-sufficient in producing polyester raw materials, as nearly all of the domestic demand for this material is met by Shahid Tongoyan Petrochemical Company, with an annual output of more than 350,000 tons. The textile sector has vast untapped potential in this field, which is already well equipped with quality raw materials. What this sector lacks is advanced production machinery. Currently, one of Iran's smaller exports is polyester yarn. However, with the high market demand of machine-woven carpets, this industry is experiencing an industrial expansion with a highly lucrative outlook.
While the sanctions imposed on Iran have provided chances for internal development in this industry, Iran has been deprived of the large growing international market. Notwithstanding the economic embargoes, Iran's carpet sector has continued to be prosperous. Iran has exported $123 million worth of machine-woven carpets from Kashan alone in the last 6 months of this year. The sanctions have also touched Almas Kavir carpets, and they are faced with resolving these challenges. According to statistics released by the Textile Association, Turkey makes close to $2 billion every year from the export of machine-made carpets, whereas Iran's share reaches barely $300 million.
The Textile Specialist Association put the volume of machine-made carpet produced in the country in the past Iranian calendar year, ended March 20th, 2019, at 90 million square meters, about 60 million square meters of which hit the domestic market. I was happy to discover that the country enjoys a high capacity of producing up to 120 million square meters of machine-made carpet per annum. It is possible, granted appropriate export markets are taken into consideration for this product. Another delightful statistic is that Iran possesses high capability of exporting machine-made carpets up by $1.5 billion annually. Iran's carpet industry has brought much profit from its exports. However, the biggest exports besides oil in Iran have been mining minerals and ores. Despite harsh economic sanctions, I was happy to find out that Iran was ranked 10th in the steel production industry by the World Steel Association. Iran's steel output has been 30 million tons this year, according to the Financial Tribune, with a 9% growth. And we're not finished yet. In our feature program, we'll be accompanying Amir Mehdi Kazemi on his journey to central Iran, majestic landscape of Yazd province, to visit Abarku City, where the Sarmad Abarku Iron and Steel Company is located. This mighty company mines iron and steel around the clock. It has the capacity of production of 600 million metric tons of steel.
Industry. A relation which has continued for generations with the aim of creating wealth and welfare. A group of workers work round the clock near the central Iranian city of Abarku in Yazd province to turn melting steel into high-quality rebars. One of the most demanded construction materials in Iran and in neighboring countries. The Sarmad Abarku Iron and Steel Company is one of Iran's latest steel complexes, which began its first operational phase in 2015 by launching a rebar production line using the latest European technologies and standards. The vision of the company, according to its founders, is increasing the capacity of Iran's steel industry in order to boost the economy and create jobs for the educated young population in the region. All the necessary infrastructures, including water, electricity, and gas, have been provided for the expansion of the complex in the future. The factory is only 500 meters away from the railway, which gives it an extra logistical advantage. Iran's steel production in 2018 reached a total of 25 million metric tons. Sarmad Abarku Iron and Steel Company currently produces more than 450,000 metric tons of rebars. The amount is expected to double after the second rolling mill is built next to the current plant. The company says it welcomes investors for its upcoming projects. covering an area of 150 hectares, the complex will be home to other facilities, including a steelmaking unit, a steel ingot production factory with a capacity of 600 million metric tons, and an electric arc furnace, which will turn it into a huge steel production complex. The National Standard Organization of Iran has issued two strict indexes for rebars used in the country's construction industry. First is the appearance of the rebar, which deals with its size and dimensions. And second are the mechanical features of the product that have to do with safety and strength. Observing strictest international quality standards becomes a must, especially when you're manufacturing a strategic product with clients at the national and international level. Here at Sarmat Laboratories, the most sophisticated demonstrations are routinely conducted on samples in order to make sure that the rebars which leave the production line are qualified enough in order to be consumed in all international markets, including in Europe. According to experts at the test lab, product benchmarks exceed national standard. Environmental aspects are also taken into consideration. The water consumed at the factory is provided by a water purification or reverse osmosis unit. R&D efforts are also underway to manufacture some of the equipment of the production line. This will diminish the company's dependence on imported spare parts at a time when U.S. sanctions on Iran's banking sector makes it difficult for Iranian industries to make foreign purchases. International figures show a considerable growth in Iran's steel output and exports since 2009. In 2018, steel exports formed about 8% of the entire export value. Iran's vision is to reach a total annual production of 50 million metric tons of steel. To fulfill that objective, foreign financing is highly required. Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Bazaar.
Well, that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. Stay tuned with us for other market-packed episodes of Bazaar. Check us out on social media by visiting our Facebook or Instagram pages. We would love to hear from you. So leave us a comment or send us a message. You can also email us with other questions or topics that you would like us to explore. Until next time.
is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio. And you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human rights from the sight or from the perspective of Amir al-Mu'mineen wa Sayyid al-Muwahideen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi as-salam. We got to the point where we are looking at justice and equality and fairness through the understanding and the application of Imam Ali alayhi salam to these two concepts when it comes to what we call musawat, being fair with everyone, and at the same time being just. Now these two terms, they might seem synonymous with each other, but the fact is there is a bit of difference. So being fair and being just doesn't necessarily mean the same. When we say a person is fair, it means that he give each person the deserving, let's say, needs. That's just being fair. So, for example, if I have a family of five and I have a family of three, I can't both give them, let's say, in terms of sustenance, both $100. because 100 might be enough for a family of 3, but not for a family of 5. So I would give the family of 5 maybe 200 and the family of 3 100, and I'm being fair. I'm being having equality between them. When it comes to justice, though, justice is applying the same thing for everybody else. The same rights that I give to you, I give to other people. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, throughout his life, throughout his rule, when he was in control and when the power was under his command for about 4 years and 6 months, he applied these two terms to the best that humanity has ever witnessed. So he took it on his shoulders to establish equality and fairness and justice amongst people. He did not differentiate between people, unlike those who preceded him. He did not give more favors to his family members over other people like the ones who did before him. He did not take a huge portion of the treasury for himself like the ones before him. He did not allow himself to sleep at night knowing that there could be people hungry and people poor while he's resting like the ones before him. And if we have to compare, I can say there is absolutely no comparison between Amir al-Mu'mineen and how he applied justice and equality and fairness and the ones before him, who were oppressive in their nature, but on the outside they might have looked and acted as good doers, where in fact they are not. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he dealt with these two concepts in a way where no one has dealt with before him or even after him. And we can see that through his words, through his sermons, through the lectures that he used to deliver, through his maxims. We can tell how fair Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam is. Let us take a short break and then we come back and we look at these words of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Just before the break, I was saying that we can tell how just and fair Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam through his words. That's how we understand. So for example, when it comes to quality, when it comes to fairness between people, he says, فِيمَ النَّاسُ فِيهِ سَوَاءَ. Whatever people are in, they are equal. Meaning, there is no difference between people. I should not differentiate between them. I should not give one person something and deprive it from another. So in this concept, the concept of fairness and equality, he was absolutely fair to everyone that was under his command, that was under his, at least, government. And each got what they require and what they deserve and their precise right. When it comes to justice, and this is where Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he is the justice champion. He is the hero of justice. He is the voice of a human justice, as was described by a Christian author. He had a name and that title, Ali, the voice of justice, or the human justice. Now, Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, when he looks at justice, he says, Al-Adlu yada'u al-umur mawadi'aha. That's how he defines it. He says with justice, it puts things in their right place. That's what justice is. And he compares it to the concept of jud, the concept of generosity. Because sometimes when a person becomes generous, he thinks he's being just because he's giving others. He says, وَجُودْ يُخْرِجُهَا إِلَىٰ جِهَتِهَا. Where when it comes to generosity, it just goes to specific people. It doesn't go to everyone. So what we need in society, what Amir al-Mu'mineen was trying to establish, he's trying to establish the true essence of justice, where everybody is treated the same, where everybody's right is given to them. And we understand that from his words as well, where he says, Al-Adlu Sa'isun. For justice, it governs. So justice is a system that needs to be applied in order to control everything. Where when he looks at generosity, for example, he says, Wajudu Ardun Khas. For generosity, it's specific, comes at a special time, where people might need something and those who are generous, they give. So he says, being in power as a governor, as a ruler, when I give, it shouldn't be based on the fact that I'm being generous. Because when we compare those before Amir al-Mu'mineen or those who are after Amir al-Mu'mineen, when they used to give, they think they are doing the servants of Allah a favor, they being kind and generous. They don't understand that it is their duty, it is their job to establish justice for all human beings, for all those who are under their command. So you're not doing me a favor by giving me from the treasury. It is in fact my right. So he's trying to look at this concept and he says justice should be a system implied in the government to guarantee that everyone has their rights given to them equally. We'll leave it up to here, and we will continue in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.